I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined on this week's episode by Blake Murphy.
What's up, man? We ready to slander the Celtics and Chris Middleton or what?
This is second on my list of basketball topics.
When you pitched this podcast to me, that is all you told me we'd be talking about. So everything is coming back to the Middleton failures and the Celtic failures.
I got to say, in recent days, first off, Team USA lost.
And two times.
Twice in a row, back to back.
For the first time ever, I think, in like major competition play.
Yeah, I guess so. I never really remember them losing back to back. Realistically, they should have lost to Turkey. I mean, we should have known that this. Well, look, we'll get into like actual Bucks and Celtics stuff. But also, having Bucks Twitter in my mentions recently, I mean, it's crazy. They're like, wow, I can't believe you're dining off this one season. I'm like,
Better than dining off of no seasons?
I was going to say, what do you want us to do? They're literally the reigning champions.
Yeah, yeah. We can dine off of one season or we can go hungry. Wow. I don't know.
Wow. It's,
The thing with like their winning streak and everything I found weird, though, not to jump our first topic, but like they absolutely have lost. Like in the FIBA Americas or the FIBA World Cup qualifiers, they lost. Mm-hmm. And like it's basically just like, okay, well, they have this winning streak when the good teams are out. And it's like, I wonder if like come Olympics now they'll retcon it where it's like, oh, we haven't lost with like our good team in 70 games or whatever.
It's becoming the Doc Rivers.
Yeah, but when we send good players.
Doc Rivers, Kendrick Perkins thing of our full team has never lost before. Yeah. Yeah, you guys won one time, man.
Yeah. We don't lose with LeBron and Melo and Wade and Bosch. And
I feel like this team could have used Melo, weirdly enough. This team was so garbage. Like they could have used Melo.
It was just weird, man. Like, obviously, I think a couple of smart people wrote or talked about how Gobert would be such a problem for a U.S. team that is, you know, was thin on traditional bigs and vertical bigs like that and why that was a problem. But, and then I know people were worried about Jokic, too, going in. But, like, both of those games felt like the U.S. should have won them.
I mean, the Serbia game, they didn't even come out with any energy. Like, they won down, like, 32-7.
Yeah.
In the first quarter.
And, like, maybe that's part of the FIBA system where, like, these 5-8 classification games, you have to play them because the way FIBA's structured is important, but maybe FIBA should restructure where, you know, that 5-8 gets classified like the other sections get classified or something. I'm not
sure. Yeah. But it's been very enjoyable. Chris Middleton. Okay, so I got these numbers yesterday before today's loss. But Middleton was averaging 8 points per game on 38% shooting. Brook Lopez, 2 points per game. Jason Tatum, 31% shooting. Then he got hurt. Kemba Walker seems to be the culprit of why USA lost to France. I think it's a little unfair to him. But, I mean, still, he's a Celtic now, so everything's
table. Get used to being blamed for... Because, I mean, Stevens and the young guys aren't going to catch any of that blame.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Jason Tatum, still only 2 years old. Okay, so we got the Team USA stuff out of the way, but realistically, I'm not saying more embarrassing, but I think the one that's closer to home, obviously, is how Canada sort of flamed out of the FIBA World Cup. And you wrote a great sort of postmortem, I guess, on you know the tournament, on where the program stands right now, and the sort of challenges there. So, Blake, how are we going to fix this program?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just like. I think most people understand this, but in case they don't, the caveat here that the guys who actually showed up and the performance with that roster was not really disappointing or embarrassing. It was, you know, the goal when the roster was what it was in the pool that they had was to get an Olympic qualifying tournament spot. Those guys did that. They deserve a ton of respect for going out and doing it. Now, rewind 6 weeks to the moonshot training camp invite list that they sent out. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, finishing 21st is a disappointment. And I don't know if I'd go as far as embarrassment, but like Canada basketball like fumbled this. They overshot with the invite list, even though they knew some of those guys weren't going to play. They didn't have contingencies for when that first wave of guys dropped out. And, you know, that's a problem. I think what's important to remember is that this isn't, and this was the crux of my piece after giving it to Rowan for a little bit, is that this isn't a single factor decision for players. And I know it's frustrating and people get mad about it, but framing it as a single factor problem, whether that's basketball players are selfish, hockey players are more patriotic, what FIBA, it's all FIBA's fault.
That one argument is particularly just annoying, man.
Yeah, the NHL and IIHF work together really well. And yeah, it's true that it's more of a part of the cultural fabric and those kids grow up wanting to play for it. But none of those explanations, first of all, capture everything, and none of them leave room for a solution. Like, if the answer is only just that, well, the FIBA system set up poorly for Canada and Canadian basketball players aren't patriotic, it's like, okay, well, it's never going to get better, so let's just move on.
Yeah.
There are a lot of factors at play that the organization can improve on, and, you know, they'll pay lip service to, but, you know, they... The time between now and the start of the Olympic qualifying tournament needs to be spent talking to stakeholders, whether that's players, agents, coaches from other teams, you know, other federations. You have to figure out the best practices that are allowing, say, a country like Australia, who's losing NBA guys but still getting, you know, half their NBA guys out instead of two out of 16 or something like that. You have to find a way to improve the situation. Mm-hmm. And then you're looking at, you know, you have Ken Burch and Corey Joseph and Kevin Pangos and Kyle Wilcher as the guys you want to carry over, but you fortify that where, you know, I think the problem that was on display with Canada, and we talked about this a little with one particular guy before we came on, is that you had the starting lineup had three guys that are maybe really good for like second unit guys for FIBA.
Yeah.
And then the second unit was, okay, well, if that's your depth crew in a FIBA tournament, you're in pretty good shape. And then it was those last couple guys that were playing minutes. It's like, okay, those minutes are a huge struggle. And so everyone's kind of up a role beyond where they would be ideally if you had, say, even three to four more NBA guys. So
they're not that far from respectability.
Right. And you have to look at this as any marginal improvement improves the situation. This single, reducing it to a single factor or throwing everything out if you don't get 12 NBA guys, neither of those are helpful to the situation. There's a world of gray in between that Canada basketball can work to improve and has to work to improve.
One thing that struck me with this roster was that they had to get a guy like Owen Klassen, which, again, respect these guys for coming out, especially on short notice, guys like Klassen and Connor Morgan to like just show up on the team last second.
Connor Morgan, UBC.
So you actually know this dude?
So his freshman year at UBC, I was a play-by-play commentator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did he also look like Mike Ganter back then?
No, he looked like a child back then. He became, like, he had a good freshman year, but he's a freshman in the CIS. Like, you don't have big hopes. Like, he's playing in the Spanish ACB league now. Like,
that's
he's
pretty
legit.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he hit some threes against Germany. I thought he had some good moments. Yeah,
he's got some game, man.
It was really unfortunate that his first play with the program this tournament was him blowing a wide-open transition layup. Yeah. But
He's a good example of, like, when you're in those in-season FIBA qualifiers, he's a really good asset for the program to have.
Yeah.
And he might grow into something more, but, like, in a tournament like this, him having to play real minutes, being added to the roster with no camp, you know, that's an issue.
And the time difference, man. I mean, at least he was coming from, coming from Spain.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit better, but even that's still like six hours.
6-7 hours, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's one of the things that struck me was that, like, why did Canada have to reach this deep? It's like, okay, fine, maybe the NBA guys aren't there, and we could talk about why and some of the factors why the NBA guys aren't there, but I mean, why not at least extend the invite to, like, Anthony Bennett or, like, Andrew Nicholson or, like, Nick Stauskas or even, like, Xavier Rathan-Mays. So guys like that. Like, Canada has enough depth in terms of the national quality that I think those guys at least – I mean, again, credit to Owen and Connor, but, like, you don't necessarily need to go there.
Yeah, Nicholson's the one that's frustrating for me because he's been playing in China and, Like, it seems like he would have been such... And his, like...
He's already in Guangdong.
Yeah, and he's a guy who, like, his game is already better suited to the FIBA game because, like, he has, like, long two range and he's used to playing it and stuff. You know, now Anthony Bennett's a case where he... This is probably his last chance to make the NBA.
Right.
I understand it a little more. He might have politely said, you know, I'm not going to come regardless. Don't put me on the list.
Okay.
But, yeah, you run into the question of, like... And Rathon Mays, like, they were really deep at guard, so maybe they didn't stress that one.
Okay.
But, like, you know, Andy Routens has been a long-time part of the program.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Andrew Nicholson's a big one who could have filled that role.
He would have been very useful for this team.
Yeah, and you look at, I don't know, maybe there's just a drop-off in bigs after the NBA guys, but, you know, and again, Klassen and Morgan, ton of respect and really good players to have in the qualifier windows, but... you know, you just can't, especially in the pool that they were in, like, you run into Australia, Lithuania, even, like, Senegal had, I think, one guy under 6'7".
Yeah, they were huge.
And even Germany's big, like, they're just, like, you were undersized in every game, and, like, Ken Birch is playing huge minutes.
Yeah.
You know, they're starting Kyle Wilcher, which is, Kyle Wilcher had an amazing tournament.
He really did.
Offensively, but on paper beforehand, it would have been like, okay, well, that's a risk for the defense. And
yeah, that's why he's a bench scorer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, these little things add up, and if everyone can slide down a peg, that's helpful. But yeah, it's that second wave of guys, and there are some other names we haven't mentioned too, of just like guys who probably could have helped. And so I don't know.
Yeah, I would have loved to have Joel Anthony on the wing.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's an experience factor there, and he gets five fouls just like everyone else, right? The thing I wonder with the moonshot camp invite list they sent out, when they invited those 29 guys, did some guys say when they came back to them after, like, come on, like,
what are you doing?
I'm not a second choice. Like I wonder, like, we'll use Nicholson as an example. He might not even be the best one because the Chinese season runs on a different calendar, but say Nicholson had a Euro gig. If he's not on that first invite list, he goes out and starts his European camp similar to Connor Morgan, and then they ask him after a bunch of other guys say no, you know, how does that feel? Are you less motivated to leave your camp and leave your situation and come over and participate, especially if you're already over there and then you have to come back? And so I wonder if – obviously there were some guys who weren't on those initial lists who made it to camp and were on that team and stuff, but I wonder if that cost them a couple guys casting this wide net and not including some guys that they ended up would have needed.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the 29 players that were invited, I think five of them were incoming rookies. Obviously, RJ being the most prominent guy.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of young guys on there. Brandon Clark, you know.
Kevin Gelly. Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
Yeah.
Even O'Shea, who's like, you know, I know that everyone gets excited and likes to fudge the number of, like, Canadians in the NBA, quote-unquote. Like, a couple of these guys on Exhibit 10s are not...
Right, right.
You know, O'Shea might actually end up getting a two-way spot, but like Lindell Wigginton as a late add to the Timberwolves on Exhibit 10, like I don't know if we need to count him just yet. But I mean, those are guys that like,
but like
those guys aren't playing.
Exactly, and that's like almost a quarter of the list.
Yeah. Now, I understand inviting those guys to camp, because even if you can get them in for 2 to 3 days, what RJ, Jamal, and Dylan did,
and just
like be touching the program, be around, get to know Nick Nurse. That would have been great, I think.
Sure.
You know, it was even a little disappointing that those guys weren't available to even do that for.
That was
a
weird part, because a lot of those guys were in Toronto like that week of the camp.
OVO.
It was in OVO. Yeah, like literally OVO got some better talent to show up, at least to the camp. Obviously, that's a way smaller commitment. Like, it's not even close. But like Nikhil Alexander was there.
Speaking of OVO,
a couple other guys.
Someone in my, I can't remember if it was in my mentions or in a, I think it was in a comment of one of my articles, suggested Canada naturalized Rondae Hollis Jefferson. Like, there we go.
He's been here a couple times.
He would have played for sure, man. He's here all the time. He's got that Canadian agent, so he's
He
does stuff with NBA
sense.
Canada, and he plays OVO and Crown every year. He's a former Crown League champion.
Yeah, that's
Stanley
right.
Johnson, too. Stanley Johnson dropped like 87 in an OVO game.
Yep. That's his claim to fame.
Probably shirtless.
He looks good shirtless. Who else? Kenneth Faried randomly comes up here a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was here for OVO. He got crossed over and dropped, actually, by Xavier.
I think even Dylan Brooks
yep.
played.
Dylan Brooks
and that was,
too.
Like, his first, like, full 5-on-5 since.
He was really good. I remember him in Crown League last year. Anyway.
Yeah. He was showing his breasts after big shots in Crown League.
Yo, he was in his element for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing you mentioned in the piece, I thought it was very interesting. Seems like MLSC has made a commitment to the program and really given it a boost.
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know if it's a long-term commitment, but obviously the Nick Nurse thing is very real. Obviously, Team Canada practiced at OVO Athletic Center. That's where they held their training camp. Through the Welcome Toronto partnership with Drake that got expanded a couple years ago, Canada Basketball and OVO, or sorry, MLSE and OVO donate $1 million a year to Canada Basketball, along with like the refurbishing of local courts and stuff like that. So there's already been a financial relationship in terms of donation. It now seems like, and I don't know how much, you know, Grunwald gets installed as CEO, or the Raptors just feel all this momentum and want to make sure it's building on the Canada Basketball side too. I think it makes sense that, you know, what's better for Canada Basketball will be better for the Raptors in the long run.
Yeah.
That's logical.
Definitely.
Now, I don't know what the relationship will look like moving forward. According to a source, MLSE helped Canada Basketball with some debt servicing. You know, if that relationship is going to be financial moving forward, I think that can only benefit Canada Basketball, especially if you're looking at bidding for an Olympic qualifying tournament next year.
It's a pretty big backer.
But even if it's not financial, you know, if MLSE is sharing things with them like, okay, well, here's our sponsorship team and here are the people in the community who have supported basketball in the past. Or, hey, logistically, here's how we've run big events before, or here's how we market events like this. Like, even stuff like that helps, because MLSE is this monolith in the city for sports across multiple sports, and like they've touched every facility. And I think, you know, there are a lot of ways that relationship can help Canada Basketball if they're open to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the most positive thing I read in the piece, was just like that. I mean, it's just whether they're doing it for their own intent or whether it's sort of just like almost like a public service for the basketball in Canada, like it's just a great involvement by MLSE. And you also mentioned that like there's the involvement from OVO as well, which I think, I mean, you know, that's sort of touch and go necessarily, but like, this is, again, for people that like get really mad at like Drake's involvement with the team and stuff, like, okay, sure, like, yes, he, when he goes to the games, there's a lot of focus on Drake. He's literally in your broadcast talking about Sangria with, you know, Matt and Jack, but like, also there is a tangible effect to his partnership. And again, like, Canada Basketball is a program where they could use this kind of help.
Yeah, look, man, if Drake goes to Canada Basketball and was like, hey, if you let me, give me the title of assistant coach, I will DJ practices. You know, that's going to help get guys out.
It'd
be goofy and people would laugh at it. But
no,
like,
people would legitimately come for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when Drake's in his sideline seat and he's like clapping in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's face in the OKC game this year.
Oh,
and he
man.
Like pulls him aside and he's like, hey, man, you could do this for Canada. Like, I'll coach you. I'll take you where you need to go.
Wow.
I'm joking, but like, that stuff's not going to hurt. Like,
no, not at all.
I know some people don't like Drake and Drake's involvement and stuff like that, but anytime you have like a big pocketed organization who's willing to help, it, so long as, you know, it's not a situation where they're also demanding control over things.
Right.
Which is maybe something you'd run into with OVO if they were a big financial partner. But, you know, exposure wise and in terms of making guys enjoy the experience and getting fans out if you do host events,
yeah,
I think that's good.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so Nick Nurse, what was your assessment of Nick in terms of his coaching performance with the program and sort of just the comfort of the players and everyone with him?
Yeah, I thought he was great. The biggest thing was, you know, he stayed on message so well. And there were times that he looked tired or disappointed or whatever. But him banging the drum of, you know, what we have is what we have and we're going to do the best with that. And also moving forward, like, here are the ways we can build. He was way more than Rowan, talking about things they could do more of and things they could do different moving forward.
That's interesting. We can talk about that in a second.
And his, like, 2020, like, his talking about everything as if, you know, hey, we'll do better in 2020 and we'll have more guys and this will help us build for that. And, you know, maybe we found four or five guys or six guys who are part of that roster. I thought it was important messaging. I thought it was a good way to let the players on that roster know that their performances mattered and they weren't going unnoticed.
Right.
And then I thought, just like, from a coaching standpoint, like, he did some interesting stuff. Like, that the comeback against Australia, they ran out of gas, but, like, he did some weird Nick Nurse things.
Yeah, they shifted to the zone.
And that helped. And, like, the Joseph Pangos pairing, like, got better and better as the tournament went along.
And that's such a big curveball to throw, man.
Yeah.
Because Joseph joins the team, like, after they played their exhibition series. Like, Pangos was balling.
Yeah.
Balling throughout all those exhibition games. And then all of a sudden, Joseph comes in and he has the ball most of the time. It's a huge adjustment.
And, like, I think there was one game where it wasn't the case. I can't remember if it was Australia or Lithuania, but in four of the five games, they generated a ton of open threes. And,
oh,
like, you can do that and you can bang them all against Jordan, but, like, if your offensive system is generating a ton of open FIBA threes, like in the long run, and you project ahead to what it might be like with more talent, yeah. I think that's a pretty good thing. You know, they did kind of the early season Raptors thing from last year, where they were very good with their pressure on the ball, forcing turnovers, but the overall defense wasn't good yet, because I think that system takes a little bit to figure out how to be aggressive without sacrificing the rim.
Also fouling and stuff. Yeah. I feel like Nick
a
was
lot
just
of fouling 3-point
straight
shooters.
Up. Like, yeah, he was so pissed.
You know, getting that Belgian ref four games in a row was.
How does that happen? You know,
I think the issue is probably that FIBA didn't want to have to ship their refs around city to city, and because each pool took place in a different city.
Yeah,
you know, you only had maybe two referee crews for each city, and they just didn't juggle them well enough. I'm not really sure, but.
Let's put them on that bullet train in China. I mean, you move around like an hour.
I've never been there, so I don't,
it's,
I don't know.
It moves like 338 kilometers per hour.
Damn.
Yeah, it's like a real source of national pride.
It's this like is what Siakam in transition.
It literally is like Pascal Siakam in transition. Wow. Yeah, I thought Nick Nurse did a good job coaching the team. I thought there were times maybe where I'm like, it's almost a little too gimmicky. But also at the same time, I'm like, what are you going to do with this roster? You might as well like gamble. Like, in order to pull up an upset, you want to create as much variance as possible. Yeah. And what variance looks like is like really heavy ball pressure to maybe force a couple turnovers, a lot of three-pointers, throwing different defensive looks out there. Sometimes it didn't make sense. Like, literally, I remember against Lithuania, like shortly before the end of the second quarter, he called timeout. And he was like, all right, we're going to go box and one. Melvin, you're going to go cover the point guard. And I'm like, all right, so that's that Pascal covering the point guard, and it's the actual box and one. And literally the first play, Lithuania makes one pass from, like, the point to the wing. And, like, I think Kuzminskas actually hit the three. And I'm like, all right, well, that was stupid.
Yeah.
But, like, you got to, like, actually try these things. And I think overall,
and I think that one, like, the reasoning wasn't even, like, to limit three-point shooting or limit one score. It's like, okay, well, we need as many guys near the paint as we can because we can kill them on our own glass. And
that too.
Yeah, I would bet that that was the logic behind that one. Or maybe, you know, to your point, maybe you just try stuff to muck it up and
something.
See if
just
you
can hurt
the other team, yeah. And, yeah. I mean, Lithuania in recent history has been a program that struggles to hit threes. So it's not the worst bet to zone against them. But
yeah, they were really hot that game. Also, they hit a bunch of floaters.
Yeah. I would also say, like, well, it's easy to hit floaters over 6 foot two guys, right?
That's just true. Yeah. Kevin Pangos kept having to box out JV in the fourth quarter. And I'm like, what's going on, man?
And yeah, like, if you wanted to find a case to criticize Nurse, like, yeah, he probably played all bench or four bench guy units too much. But
sure.
Also, you're playing five games in 9 days. And, like, I'm sure he has an understanding of, like, hey, if I'm watching Spain, I wouldn't be super happy if Marc Gasol was playing 35 minutes five times in 9 days. Like, he probably is aware of what other NBA teams would want their guys' workloads to look like.
Yeah.
Like, even in that game against Germany, he rode the bench so long in the first half.
Yeah. Although that worked in the first half.
It did. Yeah. It did. You know, I thought part of why he rode with it was probably just like, okay, look, Corey and Kevin and these other guys have played so much the last week.
Yeah. You know, and we're playing for, like, basically seeding.
Yeah.
You know, it's important, but it's also not important. Okay, I agree. I think Nick Nurse did a good job with the program. I'm happy he's there. I think at least with the talent currently there, Nick is one of the best assets for it. Like, you look at Ken Birch, for example. Like, he said so many nice things about Nick. And whatever, you always want to say nice things about your coach. But if you can win over a guy like Kem, which, I mean, Kem, for next year, actually, he's going to be a free agent. So I'm not entirely sure if he'll come to the thing. I mean, I think circumstances might be a little bit more difficult for him to play next year. Just.
Kem?
Yeah, just because he will be an unrestricted free agent.
No, he signed a two-year deal.
Oh, he just signed a two-year deal?
I thought he signed a two-year six with Orlando.
Okay. Well, okay, maybe I'll scratch that. But in any case, like, you know, I think the players generally enjoyed being coached by him. I think, you know, Birch spoke in sort of extended length about how he got to do different things in his game, got to bring the ball up, push the ball in transition, post up a couple times. It's not necessarily the greatest thing for him, but, it, you know, like, it's good growth in his game. And I think if players can see the growth element, that's something Steve Nash talked about. And then, like, yeah, that would be a benefit to the program. What about a guy – what about the performance of Rone Barrett as GM, where it seemed like he came under some heavy fire, Doug really ripped into him. Which I don't feel like that happens that often. You know what I mean?
So no, I mean,
when,
like,
that, when he does speak like that, I feel like there has to be something behind what Doug was trying to say.
Yeah, and Doug was critical of Rowan before he backed into Nick Nurse being the head coach. Like, that wasn't the game plan. They struck out on their coaching search. And the first thing I would say, the two biggest issues I have with Rowan coming out of that tournament are, one, that there wasn't a lot of accountability on that conference call. It was a lot.
Also, why did he call a conference call like half an hour after the game ended?
I don't know, man.
That was tough.
It was just like there was a lot of like, well, these are the factors, and like we got unlucky, and like it's not just us, it's affecting everyone. It's like true, but it's disproportionately affecting Canada.
Oh yeah.
And like you're not, you could frame it as being new on the job because you got the title, but like you've been the GM since like 2016 effectively.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that, and I didn't like that, you know, when people ask questions about what comes next, every answer was just like, oh, well, we'll look at that. It's like, okay, well, the second those guys didn't show up, you should have been starting to figure out how this doesn't happen again. Like, I know,
yeah,
I know you had to focus on the team that was there, but you got to build. So I don't know. I'm in a tough spot with Rowan where I know that over the last several years, he's had a big hand in creating, in helping create the development program, which has been wildly successful.
Yep.
You know, you look at the amount of Canadian talent, and maybe that happens without Canada Basketball's involvement, but it certainly hasn't hurt. You know, they build a under 19 team that wins gold. I think you also absolutely have to consider that he has a relationship with RJ, who might end up being one of the better Canadians.
That's a little awkward, but
yeah, as well as he also has a relationship with a couple of the guys' dads. Like, I think him and Jamal Murray's dad are close, and him and Shea's dad, and like,
okay,
like some of these guys who, maybe it's not Shea, maybe there's another one, but anyway, a couple of guys like have hands-on fathers, and like those relationships, right, are probably important. You know, with these things, you never know who's to blame for what specifics, right? I think there was a lack of foresight as to the issues they could run into.
Sure.
And a lack of contingency plan if plan A didn't go the way it should. You know, I'm willing to hold off on evaluating Rowan to see what changes come between now and the next cycle, because you know, I don't want to, you don't want to throw a guy under the bus the first time these things kind of come up when he's really got the reins,
right,
without giving him the chance to correct them. But, you know, I would like to hear the message start changing of very proactively. Like, this is what we're doing. This is, you know, we're changing this. We're getting this involved.
Right.
You know, I'd just like to hear that more is happening.
It almost reminds me a little bit of the Raptors and Dwayne Casey a couple times of like, yeah, okay, so you do these postmortems, and like what you didn't want to hear is like, well, we were – it was a better sweep this time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, that LeBron's kind of in our conference.
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. And, like, I think the case with Casey is, like, you know, over time, people improve. Like, first season with Casey, I was like, yeah, she's not bad. Like, he got the defense to work. Offensively, it was garbage, but whatever.
You also went, though, from being like, Casey's underplaying JV, free JV,
yeah,
I'm creating JV Hive, to Casey's overplaying JV, fire Casey.
Give me Bebe in crunch time. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, but I mean, like, I think you can stick with somebody, like, sort of through some mistakes, especially if they are accountable and they just fix them. Because it's, like, fixable things. And I think he does bring a couple of things to the table. And I'm also trying to struggle in terms of, like, who else would run it other than you, Blake. You know, yeah, if you want to accept the job right now, their offer's here. But,
yeah, well, like, Steve Nash isn't coming back through the door, right? And it's,
no.
You know, obviously, I think with anything like this where it's a kind of a federation of sorts, like, you're going to have multiple people who have their hands on it.
Yeah.
You know, you would hope that Rowan will consistently look for Nick's influence and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, there's a lot that can be improved on. That's not like, oh, you absolutely have to have someone else who's fundamentally different to improve on those things. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, I would like to start hearing the message of what those things are and what's going to change pretty soon.
Yeah. I mean, it could have just come in that conference call.
Like, why, it could have, yeah.
Why else would you have called that? I mean,
I mean, like, I even asked about hosting one of the Olympic qualifying tournaments, yeah, which I think would be, it's something I wrote about. I think it would be, yeah, a huge deal. You know, you have, for all sure, these guys who, oh, well, the location was an issue, the time difference was an issue, the time commitment was an issue. It's like, okay, yep, well, if it's in your own backyard, all those issues are gone.
Yep, yep.
Most of those guys are here a little bit after the offseason anyway.
Yeah.
Or after the season, rather.
Most of them are GTA based anyway.
Yeah. And then
you bring your family out to see you. It's, yeah, a great opportunity.
Yeah. And then Nick's been open about, like, yeah, bring your individual coaches out and we'll allot, sure, time of practice, or like your team's player development guy or whatever.
Yeah. Like Jamal Murray was there with the Denver guy.
Yeah.
Or one of Denver's guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, an Olympic qualifying tournament and an aggressive bid, I don't know whether they're financially healthy enough to do something like that. But the fact that when I asked the question, the answer was like, well, we'll see. It's like, we'll talk about it when we get back. It's like, okay, that would have been the first thing that I was trying to lock down.
Yeah. Because
that's something you can get to work on right away, right?
So, yeah.
I hope they do that, by the way.
I hope so, too. It would be great for us.
I'm skeptical.
So we don't have to go to China to cover the tournament.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't get to go to China, so.
Bro, buddy, listen, even I had a hard time getting to China, man. Like, they gave me, like, a three-week visa. I'm like, bro, I was born there. Come on, please.
You were there?
I was there, but I... What? No, not that. I went.
No,
home. I went. I went home to see. Like,
no,
home,
I knew you have been to China.
Yeah. No. This time I tried. Trust me, I tried. I tried lobbying Dan. He was like, well, you know, Quebec City is fine, but China might be a little more difficult.
Okay. Quebec City's romantic, man. You guys sneak your girl out there for
Listen, part of that. Quebec City. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll be in Halifax too, actually. So really, you've seen the east side of Canada.
Yeah, in Halifax.
There was a flight deal, man. There was a flight deal. All
right. It's. I mean, look. It's, I love the East Coast.
It was like one. It was like 130, 140 round trip.
Porter.
I forget. Maybe it was Porter. Maybe WestJet. I'm not sure. Okay. One of those. That's but yeah, it was great. Except and then afterwards, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, it's $40 for an extra bag. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'll just wear six layers onto the plane.
Yeah,
yeah.
One of those guys, eh?
Yeah, that's right.
At least your body size would have matched. At least $40. Your body size would have matched your head size with six layers on.
All right, that's enough. let's talk Raptors.
All right.
Let's hard pivot into something less depressing. Pascal Siakam, a 12-minute video just came out of him working out and stuff like that. It seems like he's working a lot on his perimeter game, which is not surprising. All the talk sort of has been, you know, he might play more small forward. Mm-hmm. I think especially for a guy who does play power forward, he does have a lot of small forward skills. Let's say for a second that he does develop those small forward skills and things like that. Are you not worried, but, you know, should the Raptors try to lock him into an extension now?
This is a weird one to me because, like, there's not a ton of like, tangible benefit to doing it now. Like,
okay.
If you don't sign him to extension now, the absolute worst case is he hits restricted free agency next summer, someone maxes him, you match it.
Yeah. And someone will max him next summer if he hits restricted
free agency. It's a terrible free agent class, and five or six teams figure to have big cap space. Now, the counter to that is that, one, maybe if you get an extension done now, you can get him at a sub-max deal. Like, maybe you can get him for $480 or something like that.
Is that realistic?
I don't know. This is the thing you have to explore, right? It's like,
okay.
Like if he says right now, I'm only signing extension for the max, you say, no, well, wait. Like, there's no...
Right.
Because the thing is like, he's going to have a very small cap hold next summer. And it's a terrible free agent class, but that cap flexibility of keeping Siakam on his cap hold, going about your offseason business, and then signing him to a max, mm-hmm. that could let you add to your roster. It could let you take an asset on and trade and pick up a first for eating someone else's salary, something like that. You're sacrificing flexibility by signing him now. So to sign him to an extension right now, you need to get him at less than a max. It has to be...
Okay.
You have to be getting something back other than the feel goods of we committed to this guy, we sent the signal to the market that we take care of our people.
There is a slight worry because the Spurs did this with Kawhi a couple years back, and that was maybe a little different. Kawhi, obviously, we've known in retrospect now that he had aspirations to go elsewhere regardless. Yeah. But
this is where Masai's relationship with Pascal probably comes in handy too, right?
Okay.
Like Pascal speaks of him as a mentor and, like, don't get me wrong.
As a father, no.
Yeah, like Pascal, don't get me wrong, Pascal wants that extension.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would guarantee it, and they'd like to get something done. But, you know, if they can't get something done numbers-wise – I think that there would be a trust that the Raptors are going to take care of him the following season.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of figuring out the number. And, like,
yeah,
I'm sure his camp knows what incentives the Raptors would need to sign that now. Like,
mm-hmm.
I just, like, if he was going to get a max extension, I feel like it would be done by now. Like, once Kawhi left, they would have been just like, okay, well, we're going to max you then.
Yeah. It could have been one of those Simmons, Jamal Murray kind of timelines.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I don't think he's going to get, like, that super max where he could earn up the 30%. I think it would be a standard max. But even then, like, if his camp won't move off a max, they shouldn't sign him to extension.
Word.
If you can trim some off the max, then it's probably worth eating into that cap space for next summer because it's such a bad class and because you have so much cap space anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's got to be the thing for me is, like, to give up that little bit of flexibility now just for the feel goods, you probably need a financial discount too. Or not even a discount because you don't know if Pascal's going to continue to progress into a max player.
Sure.
He's probably a $20 million player.
Already? Yeah, I agree.
Like roughly just to throw a round number on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big difference though between being a great number two, like a number two, literally a number two on a championship team.
Yeah.
To being a number one guy. So you...
It is huge.
You know, maybe you want to see that first if you're gonna pony up those last couple million.
Yeah. And it's always a thing where if you're a front office, you got to be real careful about who you're throwing the max at. Because, like, it's one thing to have Chris Middleton for, like, $11 million. It's a great deal. It's another thing to pay him, like, $26
million. Yeah, taking up all Team USA's cap space.
Oh, God, that Team USA team.
Man, they're going to miss Brogdon.
Brogdon would have killed it on this team. I feel like, yeah, Brogdon would be like a great FIBA guard. Like, can shoot, can pass a little bit, pretty big, physical.
Yeah, having, you know.
good players will help.
Having good players, instead of Marcus Smart. When Indiana knocks out Boston in the second round this year.
I can't wait. Oladipo get healthy, baby. What else is going on?
You got notifications going off?
Oh, my God.
Amateur hour.
The group chat is it's in support mode. I'll leave it at that. What's going on?
Well, I have
other extensions.
I would bet like $30 on who is in need of support based on based on who I'm assuming is in the group chat. But
yeah.
Anyway,
what else is going on?
Other extensions. I don't think anyone else is extension eligible other than Kyle.
Yeah. What's your stance on the Kyle thing?
I just don't see an extension making sense, right? Like,
yeah.
If they wanted to give him like a 1 year balloon, like Dan Hackett from Raptors HQ suggested, like, well, maybe you give him like $40 million next year
for 1 year. Come on, man. I understand the spirit of it. I really do, but like,
my issue would be there's no way to actually have a contract like that where then he agrees to like the mid level after that. So like, he could totally just walk away.
He'd be like, well, thanks.
Yeah,
for
thanks
this.
For the $40 million. No, I don't think. Like, I think with any of those expiring guys, if they're gonna stick around, it's just. Mm-hmm. The extension rules are so hard to work around anyway.
Yeah.
And that especially if you're trying to give a guy like have him take a pretty big haircut or like keep him at the salary for 1 year and then tailor him off.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if anyone else gets an extension. Fred's not eligible.
Yeah.
Extend Matt Thomas right now. Give him another,
why not,
4 or 5
man?
Years.
Why not?
When that Alex feature drops, they're going to.
I was going to say, Alex has told me like twice about this feature he's going to drop. So I'm really looking forward to it. He's really building the hype.
I'm still trying to. We're like almost in a race to see who can lock down a Valencia jersey first because he's on the Matt Thomas beat, and I got that Jordan Lloyd connect.
You never know, man. Alex might just pop up tomorrow in Valencia.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. He'll move around.
Isn't their soccer team in shambles? Just swooping. They like get a flight there, write about the soccer team, and come back with
that
jersey.
That does sound like how Alex would operate. Yep. Yeah. Okay. So on top of those older guys, Lowry, Mark, Serge. Fred as well, maybe. Maybe I will start with Fred, actually, because he's the exception there. He is a pending unrestricted free agent, but he's not, like, of the same age as those other three, right, who are 30. I think Serge is starting at 30, like, this weekend, I think, maybe.
Party of Rolson.
Oh, man. He's got to save Rolson.
Yeah.
That's a big Serge, buddy. Go, man. Someone's got to tell Serge about
Rolson. Don't work on an extension for Serge. Work on extending Rolson so Serge wants to stay. Beyond 2021.
Just like how MLSC bailed out Canada basketball, I need Sarge to do the same for Rolson, right?
Yeah. But don't let... There's no OVO involvement there. Drake's restaurants keep doing poorly, so...
Wow. Pick six slander out of nowhere.
Didn't Frings close down, too?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't go to these places. Yeah, I'm good, man.
On that blogger money. So come on.
Yeah. I see enough OVO owls. Fred. Do you feel like... the team as currently presented sort of sees Fred as like a core piece moving forward that they not necessarily have to retain because you don't obviously want to get to a ridiculous number, but you know, prioritize.
Yeah, I think there's probably a gap right now between where Fred sees his market being at the end of the year and where the Raptors believe he might be right now. Where I think you and I have talked about before what the starting lineup might look like. And like, the best five probably includes Kyle and Fred together. The point guard situation might not allow you to do that. But, you know, I think they're going to want to see what he looks like in 28, 30 minutes a game with the ball in his hands more instead of 20 minutes as a key reserve. Because like, if you're talking eight figures a year, if you're talking over $15 million to retain him, you better be pretty sure that he can start. And start full time, and like he hasn't been the healthiest, and I don't know how much that is random and fluky, and how much is being undersized. And
I mean, he's
got to
throw
aggressive.
His body around, when you're undersized. It's like it's kind of the same thing that happened with Kyle, except Kyle is obviously way more athletic than Fred was.
Yeah, and like Fred still isn't like a very good finisher, so like that might be a concern of like, hey, if you're the number one pick role orchestrator and you're not that much of a threat to score, what can our offense look like and stuff like that. I think there are just questions about what Fred looks like as a starter instead of a sixth man. And I think, like with Pascal becoming a number one, one of the goals of this year will be to see what Fred's ceiling is in terms of role.
Okay.
And I think that's honestly the benefit of having a year like this. And I know so many people are championship or bust all the time. But like when you're good and you're playing meaningful basketball and potential playoff basketball and you have young guys, that's a really good environment to evaluate those guys in. Where like, you know, the Atlanta Hawks rolling someone out there 30 minutes a game when they go 25 and...
Wow, Jeremy Linslander out of nowhere.
But I mean, it's true. That's exactly what we're talking about. I think it's good information. And so I think, you know, if I were to guess right now, what, like, if Fred were a free agent this summer, I think Fred's asking price would have probably been beyond Toronto's faith in him earning that contract. But, you know, that 20, it's going to be interesting too, because, like, there are no free agents that summer.
Yeah. It's weird. There are
very,
man,
few teams with cap space also.
Yeah.
But, like, the Knicks are out there, man. The Knicks do crazy stuff.
Oh, don't worry. Fred's not a power forward. He's fine.
Yeah.
Plus, they got Frankie Smokes, man. Yeah.
Fred's also like 5 years too young to sign a one-on-one with the Knicks. Yeah. No, I think this would be a big year for him, about showing that he can, not just to the Raptors, but to the whole league, that, like, hey,
yeah,
I can be more, especially where he had the rough first two rounds of the playoffs. Like,
oh,
there are probably teams in front offices who don't see him as more than a reserve point guard right now, and he sees himself as a starter. So he's going to get a lot of opportunity to show that, even if he's not quote unquote the starting point guard.
Right. So, I mean, look, I want to see all those things out of Fred too. This is not one of those things where, like, if the organization today, like, maxed out Siakam, I'd understand. I'd be like, you know, maybe not necessarily the best thing strategy-wise, but, like, I understand. I have that.
Yeah, Bobby Webster probably wouldn't be happy. Like, yo, I wrote CBA loopholes for this. what are you doing? My cap holds.
Jeez. I hope he's cooler than that in real life.
What's that?
I hope he's cooler than that in real life. He seems like a pretty cool guy, man.
He's the coolest guy in the room.
I was going to say, yeah, he definitely has
he's probably unflappable.
Chill swag about him.
Yeah, him and Masai are probably actually really entertaining, like, 1-2 if they're, like, team meetings and group meetings and stuff. Because, like, Masai's all passion and energy, and Bobby's probably just like, we'll get it sorted out.
Yeah, he's from Hawaii, man. Yo, he's got that. Yeah, exactly. He's cool. Man, he's cool. He's chill. Shout out Asian-American legend, Bobby Webster. All right. The other guys, Kyle Lowry. How much would it take to pry Kyle Lowry in a trade this year?
More than any team's going to offer. Like, he makes $35 million. That's hard to make the cap math work.
But you know what? I agree. It is a big number. And he is older. And it takes a certain situation. But a couple of those situations might be out there.
Yeah.
Like, if you're Minnesota, for example, you might want to do something. If you're Orlando, you might want to do something.
But then you run into the Raptors have to take salary back to match. Mm-hmm. And then it's one thing if that's an expiring deal. You know, Orlando has some options. If you attach, you know, hey, Aaron Gordon, maybe that's a guy you're willing to take on money for. Andrew Wiggins, I'm less certain that, unless you're throwing a bunch of picks on top of it also. My answer with Mark, Serge, or Kyle is going to be, I would be okay taking back 2020, 2021 money, because that free agent class is so poor, and, like, your cap flexibility is as much about asset maximization as it is signing guys.
Mm-hmm.
That summer, I'd be okay taking on money if you can get picks or prospect equity.
Which should be possible, right? Because you're looking at it on paper. So many teams are trying to get into that 2021 class.
Yeah.
That if you have an expiring now, even though it's like, okay, it's expiring for 2020 and not the following year, you can take on some long-term money and get some picks.
Or even a possible avenue. Even like 1 year of money, just so that, you know, like, say, I don't want this to happen, but say the Celtics are having a good season and they're worried about Joel Embiid insurance and Gordon Hayward is still struggling. Would they attach something to Hayward to get out of his 2020-2021 year and get Marc Gasol back?
Yeah, I'll take Jaylen Brown. That's fine.
Future Raptor, Jaylen Brown.
I like Jaylen Brown, man. There's a couple. He seems like a really cool guy.
Yeah.
You were an early Jaylen Brown guy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I was that draft year. That was the Pirtle year.
Yeah.
And
there was talk that he might slide. He was like,
there were rumors that he was going to slide, and there were rumors that the Raptors had like a secret meeting with him just in case he slid and liked him.
A rendezvous.
Yeah, but he didn't slide, obviously.
And then we got Jakob Pertl. I remember being so upset that we missed out on Marquise Chris.
Marquise Chris was your guy? All right. I forget.
You know, when you look at highlights of a guy like Marquise Chris, you're like, wow, look at this dude. You don't understand.
And then you see him getting choked,
a complete waste
choked
man.
Up by Serge. yeah, I think, if I remember right, because my whole thing that draft was like, if none of the top eight guys, because everyone thought that was an eight-man draft.
Really. Yes, yes.
My thing was, if none of the top eight fall, what I would have preferred, because it was a free pick basically from the Bargnani strategy, was a swing for the fences.
Yep.
It's like at that point where they
were. And
that's
where Chris would have come in. He seemed like a guy where if you can, like, put him in the right
space.
He went
in the top eight anyway, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Four or five or something.
Yeah, Phoenix traded up to get him, which is hilarious.
Yeah, pairing with Dragan Bender, the future.
Oh my God, what a bad draft, man.
What a bad organization.
Dragan Bender, and they traded up, and they gave up Bogdanovich, who's actually good.
Damn.
Yeah. And now they have no point guards.
Yeah. It's and a couple years back they had all the point guards and couldn't play them together.
Yeah, Phoenix is hilarious. I hope they don't overpay Fred. I guess they already had a chance to and they didn't. So
yeah, but they did that weird thing where they signed Ariza and like ate up their cap space, and it was like, yo, hold up, wait for us. I was like, nah, you take that money.
I'm still shocked that Ariza didn't go to the Lakers. That seemed like a James Jones assist right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't need to get too deep into the draft, but I was big swing for the fences. And I think Deontay Davis was my guy. And then you find out afterward that like he flamed out at a bunch of stops really quickly for the reasons that really talented guys tend to flame out at spots. Yeah. Jakob Poeltl helped get them Kawhi Leonard, so not a bad pick. And then they did the swing for the fences thing with 27.
Yeah.
Pretty, Pascal, pretty tidy baby. How that all worked out.
Goddamn, Masai. Great job with that draft. Okay, so your answer is kind of the same for all three. Because, I could see, like, again, like, these guys are very, very useful to a lot of teams.
It's just, like, that's why I'm not giving them away for nothing.
Yeah.
It's like the Raptors are going to be a playoff team and could maybe make a little bit of noise in the East, depending on how things shake out and how healthy guys are and stuff. It's like, it's not like if the Raptors traded them in season, they could get bad enough to tank or anything like that anyway. So, you know, why walk away from having a good year just to get rid of guys? Like, unless you're picking up a real asset, just run it back for the year.
And it's not that bad to lose a guy, the guys of these calibers, especially at their current ages, without necessarily getting... It's not like, okay, you like Chris Bosh walk for nothing.
Yeah, didn't you know they sign and traded Bosh for a couple picks?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They signed. That was back when sign and trades were big. Now I feel like it's hard to do.
Yeah, but, well, you get that extra year then.
Yeah. Who'd they get out of that? Didn't they get JV out of that or no?
I can't remember. There was something...
Because they got their own pick back. Yeah. Which is really
that
just so
sad. That
might
have been the JV one. I can't remember if the Bruno pick was in there too or... I forget that it was like...
Yeah.
It was one of those situations where it was like an either-or pick and I don't remember the specifics.
Yeah.
Either way, though.
I'm cool with just, yeah, I'm just cool with riding these with these guys. Like, I don't know. I'm cool with the either way. One thing I would mark that I forget where I saw this, but I actually think it was like someone on Real Gym, but there was someone pointed out that like, so Mark is 34 years old. He played the entire season. Obviously went to the finals, won the finals. Great time. Got really drunk at the parade. So drunk he couldn't speak at the actual title. Whatever presentation they had at the end.
Danny saving him.
Danny saved him. Literally, he was too drunk to even talk to like Trudeau and stuff like that.
I met Trudeau the other week, by the way.
What?
Yeah, just at a coffee shop in Hamilton. He rolled up.
Was he like on the campaign trail? Like what was
he was
going
like
on?
Meeting with some unions or something, but he stopped to get a coffee and like did the handshake thing around. It was very
wow.
It's very strange. I was just like at a coffee shop and he walks up. And I'm like, oh, wow, right.
Okay. Yeah, the election's coming up. That's something you could look for coverage of that
elsewhere.
Yeah, not on this podcast. But what was I going
to
say?
You got real stick to sports there, real quick.
No, I was just completely lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, with
we
Mark.
Were talking about Gasol,
yeah, Mark's. Yeah, and then like don't vote Andrew Scheer. That's about it. But
sauceless.
Very very sauceless. Like the sauce is mayo. But what was I going to say about Mark? His usage has been really high, man. So he plays that very long season, plays deep into June, takes about a week off, and then all of a sudden he is preparing for the Spanish national team, which it looks like they're going to – while they're in the semifinals, I think they have a very good shot of actually advancing and winning the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so –
And then
you know,
it's less than 2 weeks before to training camp.
Yeah. And this is something that Nurse talked about too of like – You know, we probably have to manage his workload just a little bit because, again, he's had an extremely long season for someone of that age. Yeah.
Well, assuming that Boucher hasn't completely screwed his chances of being in Nurse's favor, you know, you do have some big man depth that you can work with if you're going to load manage Mark and Serge a little bit early in the year, you know, get Boucher some minutes. DeJuan Hernandez is on an NBA deal if he makes that roster.
He's probably going to spend most of the year in G League.
I think so. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, you have guys, especially if this year is about, yes, winning, but also developing and seeing what guys have.
Right.
You know, look at the problem they ran into last year where it's like, okay, Boucher's too good for the G League and he's too good for Summer League, but we can't find him any NBA minutes to test it out and see if he's
right.
You know, I think there will be windows for something like that.
Okay.
You know, Mark, yeah, I'm cool with Mark relaxing a little bit.
He's going to need a couple games
in training
off.
Camp and
he's going to need a couple games off. Yeah. Which I think, I mean, Serge will be happy to step into center and
Yeah, I mean, you keep Serge happy with a couple starts there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't, like, Rondé can play some small ball five, too, if you want to get funky.
Yeah, that's a little too funky.
No, man, you go Rondé at the five, Pascal at the four, OG at the three, Stanley at the two.
Oh, God.
And then you just have one point guard out there to coordinate it all.
To take all the shots?
Wings only.
To take every single shot? Fred? Yeah. Fred's going to have, like, a 25% field goal percentage. Yeah. All right, last things. A couple of rapid fires.
Hang on, wait a second. If they ran that lineup and Matt Thomas was the fifth guy, do you think another team would try to box Sam one Matt Thomas and just dare the other guys to shoot?
I mean, they should. They should.
I'm just like, I'm very much looking forward to this year. Some coach being like, screw you, Nurse. I'm running a gimmicky defense against you. Let's see how you like it.
I want Steve Kerr to do it. Except Steve Kerr's a collaborative talent. Steve Kerr's the real Steph Curry. Okay. Rapid fire. The Pistons signed Joe Johnson.
Seven-time All-Star Joe Johnson.
Seven-time All-Star Joe Johnson. Credit Assad for this, but is Dwayne Casey just building a team of Raptor killers?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, for had, revenge. To be, that had to be part of it. They probably also weren't super happy that right after they signed Bees, he got suspended.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
But, yeah, I mean, Joe Johnson used to be repped by Arn Tellem, who runs the Pistons now. Okay. I'm sure the Dwayne Casey conversation was pretty funny, and Joe was just like, you know better than anyone that I can still get buckets. And Dwayne was like, can you still get them against Toronto?
That's all I care about. Yeah. I'm signing you for just three 10-day deals every time they play the Raptors. Yeah. He's, yeah. And if you were to build a team of Raptor killers.
Oh, God.
You did a piece about this. Yeah. A great piece about this a couple years ago. It was kind of a nerd out kind of thing.
It was like the start of last year. It was like when the Bucks owned them with like Ersan and Thon Maker before they traded Thon.
Right. Yeah, I mean who's in your starting five of Gerald Henderson's basically. The Gerald Henderson starting five.
Active guys?
Active or past.
Okay. Because past Gerald Henderson's
Gerald Henderson's a captain of he's coaching the team. He's coaching the team.
I'm trying to remember who was on my thing, but the two that I'm like certain are on there, whether or not, like, the thing that I did was like purely statistical, so I'm gonna go on feel only. Like Channing Frye's on that team.
Oh my god
the melted
2016 wounds just coming open right now, man.
I don't know, do we give DJ Augustine the nod, or is that too much recency bias? Like he had a DJ Augustine game in a playoff series.
Okay, so one of the only predictions I had right about Orlando series was that DJ was gonna outscore Kyle Lowry.
Okay. Did he?
He actually ended up outscoring Kyle Lowry. Now, granted, that was because game one was
a 25-point lead.
Yeah, but that was disappointing. Yeah, I could put it's either DJ or Ish Smith for point guard. Yeah. I feel like Ish kills the Raptors every time.
I mean, Ish kills that dropback scheme, right?
Yeah.
Just like with the floater king. Who was I going to say? Doug McDermott's on there.
Yep. McBuckets.
Yeah. There are so many like mid options. Like
I was gonna say,
Etuan Moore put 30+ up against the Raptors, but that might. I don't know if he's done it long term enough.
I feel like he did it with the Pelicans a couple of times.
Yeah, he definitely did it. And then with the Bulls. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put the whole Bulls roster on there. I feel like they got the Jimmy Butler thing behind them now, though, because they beat the Sixers. Like Jimmy Butler
and Ersan as well.
Yeah, Ersan unplayable in that series.
Although game two, what was it? Ersan and Mirotić. In Milwaukee game two, I couldn't believe it, man. They were just drawing charges, flopping, hitting threes. I was like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. I think Ersan should be on there, if not for his performance against the Raptors, which qualifies him, but also because like he's like the only guy every year who beats Kyle in the charges drawn category. Like I feel
how the hell does he have 57 charges?
Like, I feel
drawn?
Like Kyle must hate this guy. He's like, I lead the league in charges every year except for Ersan Ilyasova.
Who has double.
Yeah.
I guess he's just a big man, so he's close to the rim.
Yeah.
But like, come on, man. He's
and I think
maybe
he always looks like he's in pain. So
he
maybe
does.
That helps.
Yeah,
that helps sell it.
He's got a resting wince face.
Yeah.
If you could start a podcast with anyone on the Raptors, who are you going with? And I'm not asking this on behalf of my company.
Oh, yeah. on the current roster. That's tough. I feel like if it didn't have to be a basketball podcast, I feel like Marc Gasol's the answer.
I was going
to
say, I was also thinking Mark. Mark or Serge? Serge would have a great podcast, but you wouldn't say anything. Serge would just be talking the whole time about whatever Serge talks about, fashion, his childhood.
It'd be really interesting, but
Serge has the most interesting story on the team. Like I feel
for
like
for sure,
yeah.
Oh, those videos of him going back home to the places
it's
that he used to like. Get,
it's crazy.
Giving scraps and stuff, it was amazing.
Yeah, like he had to eat scraps, like basically beg for food during like the most difficult parts of his life, and then like this past year he brings like the trophy and like has food at that restaurant. It's like the first time he's come back.
Larry will be there, man.
That's crazy. What a story.
But yeah, so much of those, like Masai bringing it back and like Pascal being there and stuff. It's like, it's so awesome that they got to do that. It's been one of the funnest parts of the offseason is just like going on Instagram every day and like Malcolm Miller's having an event with the Larry. Like all these guys get a chance to do it. Yeah, I think, you know, like you could talk about fishing and whales and like his homegrown garden, and he just seems like such an interesting guy. You could talk about Queen for like five episodes.
He also looks like a podcaster.
Yeah, he does look like a podcaster. Matt Thomas looks the most like a podcaster.
Matt Thomas talking about DBT or whatever. I don't know. I don't listen to the Joe Rogan podcast. I just wanted to pretend like I did. I do not listen to that.
I didn't even get the reference, so there you go.
I watched it one time because he had Andrew Yang on, and it did not look like a good episode.
The only time I've watched it is when he had George St. Pierre on, because George St. Pierre basically like copped to thinking he gets abducted by aliens, and I was like, well, I got to watch that.
All right. Yep. and then the last rapid fire. This is not a great rapid fire round. I could have done more. The Raptors made a couple more, they finalized their coaching staff. They promoted Brittany Donaldson, John Goodwillie, and they also brought in Fab Flournoy. Flournoy? What's this?
I think it's Flournoy.
Flournoy?
Flournoy. There's an L in there.
It's a little strange. And a couple other guys, but I don't know. Just give us some background into these people.
Yeah. So Brittany Donaldson is coming over from the analytics department.
Right.
A couple years ago, they had moved Eric Khoury from the analytics department to the coaching staff as like an extension of the analytics department, help with decision making and in-game tracking, stuff like that. He's moving to 905 to continue to grow as a coach in like a bigger assistant role.
Mm-hmm.
So there's someone that'll come up to the video room. Marsh will come up from the video room with 905 from the bench of 905 to the Raptors video room. And then John Corbaccio gets promoted to Goodwillie's old role. Goodwillie moves to the bench.
Right.
And then Flournoy, and there's one other guy whose name I'm drawing a blank
on. Mark Tynesdale?
Tindo. Yeah. So he's a guy who was like just in the G League 2 years ago.
Okay.
So him and Flournoy are both like recently retired players, or I guess, I don't know if they're officially retired, but they're coaches now. So
yeah.
So those would be player development guys. Brittany also has, so Brittany Donaldson, who's coming over from analytics.
She's mad young, 26.
Yeah, that's so impressive. She'll be part of that, like, she's an extension of the analytics staff. Mm-hmm. But also, like, she has, like, a bunch of records at Northern Iowa, like, from hooping. Like, she can ball. And, like, she was already, I did a story midseason when Fred was hurt about, like, he went to the analytics team and he's like, I'm bored. Like, what can you tell me? What can you show me? And she was the one who kind of, like, was like, well, this is what we see, and, like, let's drill this stuff so you can get better. And, you know, she told the story in the Zach Lowe piece about how she ran Mark's workout when Mark was in Toronto after the trade. So she's got lots of experience working with players. So those people will help on the development side. Goodwillie will probably do, like,
he did Summer League.
He head coached a Summer League, and he has a good reputation for, like, his game plans and his packages for upcoming opponents are really good.
Right.
Because he was the head video guy. So I'm sure he'll have a hand in that. And then his main three guys are staying the same with Bjorker and Griffin and Scariolo. So the kind of chain of command at the very top is probably pretty similar.
Yeah. Someone on Twitter was telling me that Goodwillie was an MCI grad as well. So shout out MCI.
I don't know. I know.
It's the high school that I went to.
I figured. Yeah.
Yeah, and his story is like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like all the video guys' stories are a little bit sad because they're like, yeah, I came in like 15 years ago and I've been watching video ever since. And now I finally have a break. But like, I have like mad respect for people like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, hey, that's how Spoelstra got started, man. Yeah. He was a video room guy. So, everyone.
It's good stuff. I like the way the Raptors are thinking in terms of just like strategically how they're moving.
Yeah.
It's
a very diverse staff, which, you know, there's a lot of evidence that diversity of experience helps with group decision making.
Yep.
Nurse is a very firm believer that, you know, you have to experience things in different roles and in different situations to improve as a coach, which is why he values guys getting head coaching experience or girls getting head coaching experience, things like that. And then I think from a, you know, developing your people standpoint, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And then more like broader organizationally, when you have people like Eric Khoury and Brittany Donaldson who have come from front office roles and have been with the development staff and with the main roster, I think there's a continuity of thinking across departments then. And like they're almost conduit. Conduit is the term that they used a lot in this book, The MVP Machine. It's a baseball book, but basically about how analytics people have started to infiltrate player development in baseball.
Right.
Because they can translate a lot of those findings to players and work on the ground level with them. And they're really important to, mm-hmm. you know, keeping the whole organization on message and taking what might be complicated takeaways from the front office and making them digestible and actually like putting them into practice at the coaching level. So I yeah. think, you know, I think it makes sense. Obviously we don't know how these people are going to do in those roles until we see it.
Sure.
And it's obviously assistant coaching is a very difficult thing to evaluate anyway, but strategy wise, I think it makes sense. I think it's how you build an organization that's versatile and smart and how you're insulated from, you know, if next year there's a brain drain where everyone wants to poach the Raptors people, you know, you have people who have been in different roles and who you've yeah. been developing. So I think it's smart.
Yeah. I mean, they got what an assistant coach from that coached internationally extensively in Scariolo. I guess Fab is kind of the same way. A player coach.
Player coach from Britain.
For like 16. He was like a player coach for like a decade.
He's
plus.
In his 40s and he's still playing.
Yeah. Wild.
He's also like, he, for anyone who doesn't know, he's been with the Raptors the last two summer leagues and like was around during the playoffs. So like,
yeah.
he's already up to speed and like can hit the ground running and stuff and the relationship with Nurse. So yeah. it's similar to how like the Scariolo thing came together after he spent most of summer league with them last year. And,
yeah. You got a video guy.
Yeah. And I mean, like, Bjorkgren, Goodwillie, and Nurse have all been on the Canada basketball staff.
Yeah.
Out in China. So it's like, I'm sure in their downtime, they're already talking Raptors and stuff for this year. So.
Yeah. They're like, forget the Owen Klassen Packers.
Yeah. Man. We don't need to worry about our offense against Jordan.
That was a crazy game. 24 three-pointers. Respect Canada for that one. That
just
one, that
blowing was... away. FIBA, I love how FIBA's like, well, we didn't really keep track of stuff before 1994, but from what we can see, you blew away the record. It's like, you really think anyone was dropping 24 threes in a game prior to 1994?
Yeah, people weren't even attempting that many back then.
I'm going to doubt
it. All right. Well, got those for the podcast. Blake, thank you for coming on. Is there anything you want to plug? What's going on with you?
Not much, man. It's been a strange summer, like, personally. Like, I've barely been in Toronto.
Right.
So it's like obviously, we were both traveling during the playoffs, and that kind of takes you out of sorts. And mm-hmm. then, like, there was Summer League. I was out in Newfoundland to work on a book project, and then I stayed out there for some family stuff.
Right.
And I was just kind of, like, bouncing around. Like, I took a week off for vacation, but then I was home for a bit. It's just, like, it's been a weird summer where, like, it's been really fun. I haven't really taken a break other than 1 week because right. of the book project and the World Cup and keeping up coverage and stuff. But, like, I don't know. I feel like it's been a great change of, like, routine and not being, you know, not working at the desk in my bedroom every day in Toronto. And it's been a fun summer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on behalf of everybody, I mean, thank you for everything that you do coverage-wise. And we hope you soak in a couple more moments before it starts getting crazy again.
I got to get this. Got to get this book done before camp starts.
Yeah. Well, that's the Blake response I was expecting. But
yeah. Man, I don't want to be juggling that stuff when things get rolling.
Yeah,
like, oh, I can't write about Siakam's 50 piece. I got to do a final edit of this draft.
Man, it's coming this year, baby. It's coming.
He's going to...
Pascal versus probably Washington, or maybe New York or something like that.
Yeah.
Probably Washington, actually.
No, New York has so many power forwards. It'd be tough.
Oh, that's right. Taj Gibson going to hard foul him when he's got 45.
Yeah. No, I think it's, you know, I didn't... Obviously, we don't take the work off-season workup videos too seriously, but I thought that your point when you wrote your Pascal thing a couple weeks back, which was really good... that he's probably going to have to up the mid-range usage.
Yeah, definitely.
It's clearly been a huge focus of his offseason. Yeah. And I know that like some people get their arms up at mid-range shooting.
Yeah,
you don't want to build your offense around that, and you don't want that to be your primary tool. But if you're a guy who can knock down the corner three and teams are going to sell out to keep away from the rim, you got to have that in your package.
Improving any part of your game, even one that... isn't going to be the entire focus of your game. Makes sense.
Yeah. You know what a 40% mid-range shot is better than? A 30% mid-range shot or a turnover.
Yeah. And like, and in the playoffs, like, if you got to shoot a lot of threes, I'm not saying that it's not good, but you need, at least we saw in this year, like part of what made Kawhi so effective was he had the diversity in his game.
Yeah.
Couldn't stop him any level. And soon you won't be able to stop Pascal on any level. Yeah. So
step backs above the break. Well, I'll wait and see.
Yeah, that
those.
Little Dirk one-legged jumper. I'm like, what's that about?
But, yeah, I'll wait on buying into that. But
yeah,
the other stuff looks good.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Blake, thanks for coming to the podcast. Everyone, thanks for listening to the podcast. There will be more Raptors content next week, somehow, despite there being nothing going on. So thanks for listening.
Hey, Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.